Welcome to Double Take. Critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
And this is Double Take. And we have one that I think is going to be a classic. How about that, huh?
You think
it's
so?
It's our show. I do. It's called The Harder They Fall.
Yeah.
All right. And you have reservations.
No, I saw the trailer for this movie. It's a new Western directed by James Samuel, who I'd never heard of.
Oh, this guy.
You've heard of the singer Seal?
I do. It's his brother.
This is his brother.
I know.
I didn't know that.
I know.
Okay. So apparently this guy goes by The Bullets.
Yes. That's his name.
And he's a British music producer, singer, songwriter. And he makes, I guess, these videos, these films that go along with his music. So I'd never heard of the guy. And he comes guns a-blazing.
Good one. With James, J-E-Y-M-E-S.
Yes, with this new Western.
Yep.
An all-black cast.
Yep.
Mostly there are a couple of scenes with white people in it, but they're incidental. I saw the trailer and I just thought, okay, this looks fun, but maybe a little too hyper-stylized.
It is.
And it is.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I'm watching this movie and it has enough of these little sort of variations on the old tropes, really clever twists in the violence that I thought was fun. And it plays like a graphic novel inspired adaptation of a Sergio Leone Western, if that makes sense.
Well done.
Right?
With a little John Sturges and John Ford put in there.
For sure, yeah. So clearly, one of my complaints about modern Westerns, contemporary Westerns usually, is that it feels like the filmmakers aren't familiar with Westerns.
Okay.
Clearly, I think Samuel has done his homework. He knows and loves Westerns. There are a lot of references to Unforgiven and the Leone pictures.
You got to love the one where the guy's taking the photograph of the body. And it's just quick. It's just, but there, I think it's probably larded with stuff like this, with references like this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Idris Elba plays the big heavy here, and there's a scene where he's beating a sheriff in the middle of the street. And doesn't that just scream Unforgiven? Gene Hackman and Unforgiven. Yes. So there's a lot of this. You know, there's a shot even of Jonathan Majors, who's the lead here. There's a shot of him kind of strung up in an office, you know, with his back towards the camera.
Yeah.
Also, again, reminding me heavily of Morgan Freeman in Unforgiven.
Oh,
so there's
gosh.
A lot of, you know.
Well, how about when they're. This is a shot not just for this film, but for so many after The Magnificent Seven, when you have them all riding up on their horses. The flank. This time they're nine.
Right.
But there were seven from that one. But I mean, it's just.
Yeah. Lots of that stuff, right? And I will say that. So first of all, we got to talk about his whole approach to this. Now, we talked briefly a while back about the history of black cowboys. And, you know, the black cowboy.
Idris was in Concrete Cowboys.
Right. Well, that was a modern day tale, right?
Yeah.
But what we have seemed to miss all these years in this genre is a representation of the black cowboy, whether hero or villain, rancher or outlaw.
What are the stats on that? Anywhere from a quarter to a third.
Yeah.
Cowboys were black.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating, the history of it. And Samuel has, like, listen to these names. Rufus Buck,
yes.
Nat Love, yeah. Trudy Smith, Stagecoach Mary, and Cherokee Bill.
Some of these are real people.
They're all of those, every name I just named, it was a real person.
Yes.
Now, there's a big discrepancy
of course.
Between reality here and this movie. And I think he did that on purpose. I think he rooted, his story in these real names, real lives. But then he tells this crazy kind of operatic Western.
Good one. Very good.
Drama,
I thought the same thing.
In order to capture the imaginations of younger people, I would imagine.
Well, I was again thinking about our show on black cowboys and three that I don't know. I think we did mention Buck and the Preacher with Sidney Poitier.
Okay.
And so we've got Buck here.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But then we had Sergeant Rutledge and the Legend of Black Charlie, which I've not seen any of those.
And
but
Woody Strode was always a great you know, presence in the John Ford films. Idris Elba kind of cutting a Strode-like figure here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So the point would seem to be, for our audience, they're going to say, oh, no, I don't want to be beaten over the head about how whites themselves had persecuted blacks and so on. I don't think that's in here, do you? I mean, toward the end, it does, the white town.
Race is kind of floating on the periphery here, you know? You get it in the confrontation between Buck's gang and the cavalry guys, right, on the train.
Oh, my gosh, mercifully.
And then you get it a little bit in the bank robbery scene, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot of overt stuff. What I love, there's a great moment right before the train robbery or the escape sequence where they're going to break Rufus Buck out. And Regina King is riding up, and the engineer.
Oh, the just poor engineer.
He just goes to say what you think is a racial slur, but before he can get it out, she puts a bullet in his head. And then Lakeith Stanfield, who's great, I love that guy, he makes a comment like, you know, he might have said nincompoop.
Right, she said no. Yeah, she says something about the N-word.
It's great. And that's really as sort of intense as it gets
and
about
it's
race.
It's what I like very much about this. This is just a rock'em sock'em Western without being having racial undertones or overtones, but it does.
It has to be there. You know, sure. I think Samuel knows that as a genre, so much erasure has happened over the black experience and black representation in this particular genre that, you know, Hollywood built itself on this genre. Yeah. Hollywood was built on the Western. And so it's really important to, you know, show these characters.
And, you know, you got to love some of the touches, like Stagecoach Mary, I'm sure, never sang R&B.
Yeah, yeah, right.
when in the 19th century. But he brings in music. Jay-Z is a producer. Mm-hmm. And there's some Jay-Z music in the beginning. And Samuel himself has done a lot of the music for this.
Okay, yeah. You know, that's one of the things I wanted to mention, too, when I saw the trailer. I thought, I don't know if the music was going to take me out of the genre.
I know.
One of the reasons why we love the Western is because it's transportive. It takes you into this world, right? This world of dirt. And the clomping sound of horse hooves, and that music might take you out. He very sparingly, I thought, dabbled with a little bit of the R&B. There's a great score here. He plays with it.
Yeah,
he's playing with it.
I guess he's got some reggae in here. He's got it all different kinds. But you're right. He does it beautifully. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if as you and I usually do, we put on the subtitles.
Yeah, of course.
What's very valuable in that is that for the songs, they give you the lyrics that are almost indecipherable unless you have that. Mm. And then you can see how he has fit sound to sense.
Yeah.
This is what I love about this.
Yeah.
The prominent roles for women here. Strong women. Mm-hmm. Wow. Regina King.
Zazie Bates.
Yes, she's excellent.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, she's...
You know what? Every time I see her face, you can't take your eyes off of it. There's something going on. Like, and I mean, I've seen her. Obviously, she was in The Joker, or Joker, rather, with Joaquin. Mm. She's played Domino in Deadpool 2, I think. I really would love to see her front and center in something. Because she's so watchable in a strange way.
Mm-hmm. And there are references to the past and to the, you know, the kind of 12 years a slave business without being it. I just caught at one point where Lakeith Stanfield, and I must agree with you, he practically steals this movie every time he's there.
I know. I found myself every time I saw him wondering how much better this movie would be if he was in the Jonathan Majors role.
And you know, I
I warmed up to Majors, but he does not have half of what Stanfield does. I was going to say, so he says at one point, so we're going to get away Dred Scott free?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's such a great line. Just perfect.
Really great line. Yes. Yep. You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, always amusing conversations about movies. We're talking about the new James Samuel Western on Netflix, mm-hmm. The Harder They Fall.
Mm-hmm.
Really fun entry, really fun contemporary entry into the genre. But go ahead, what were you saying?
Two things. First of all, I love how new the gun belts are and the guns,
mm-hmm.
how they feature those. Are just, and after the Alec Baldwin thing, you're a little bit more sensitive to their use of guns.
I do want to talk about the cast, Jonathan Majors, we were talking about.
Yes, right, we were.
Okay, Jonathan Majors is such an amazing talent. And I first became aware of him in the movie The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Remember that?
Oh, yes, I do, yeah.
And the minute I saw that film, I just was like mesmerized by this guy. And I made a mental note to remember his name because I knew that he was going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Very quickly, within a few years, he went from, he has a small part in the Five Bloods, with Spike Lee's movie. And he kept popping up here and there. And then lo and behold, boom, he was cast as Kang the Conqueror in the Marvel show Loki.
Oh.
And then this. Uh-huh. And now he's going to be the villain in Creed 3.
Oh.
And so all of a sudden, this guy is just like everywhere in these big tentpole movies. And I just wonder if he's not getting ahead of himself a little bit. So my point being, in this movie, he's the hero, right? I love the way he moves. He's got some great physical movement here in the Western garb and, you know, with the six shooters. He looks great. But I just didn't wonder if he wasn't a little too fresh-faced, a little too sweet. And that's why I kept thinking about Lakeith. Yeah. Because Lakeith Stanfield has that like pained expression in his eyes all the time. He's got the laconic sort of.
He's got the danger written
patois,
all over.
You know, right? And I just felt like, man, he also just doesn't have that. Just perfect. Like Jonathan Majors just seems like I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
All right, I think I'm catching what you're saying. And this was my initial response to it. How does he get the lead role? But as I watched him in the film, he's capable of moving his face, as you were talking about his body. He moves it beautifully, and he understates almost everything. But he's got a great, almost impish smile about him. He works with her. What's her name?
Zazie Bates.
Right, yeah. Zazie Bates. He works with her very well. But yeah, so I'm with you. I'm saying that's why I so admire casting directors. How do they know that this guy is going to pull this off? Now, to answer your question, when you have Idris Elba and Lakeith Stanfield in this, you don't necessarily have to have a central casting hero.
No, I get it. I just feel like he hasn't had a chance to cultivate his darker edge.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He still seems a little, like I said, sweet-eyed and fresh-faced. Two complaints about the movie. The length. It is about 15 to 20 minutes too long.
Okay.
I don't need a lot of those romantic interludes.
Yeah,
in the Westerns.
Yeah.
I feel like those could be more efficiently done. A glance here and there, a line here and there. We don't need a lot of exposition. And, you know, I had mentioned Sergio Leone, and when those spaghetti westerns first debuted on the world stage, I would imagine that a lot of the complaints initially leveled against them would be some of the complaints one might level against this movie, right? It's too stylized. It's too aware of itself. Mm-hmm, it's too hyper attuned to the, you know, the beats of a western and commenting on itself. So I can't hold that against it. But the thing I love about those Leone movies is that even though they are so hyper-aware and so stylized, you feel the grit in them. The actors are sweaty. They're dirty, you know. And this, the thing that kept taking me out of the movie was how much it just felt like playing dress up.
Oh, listen, I felt it was almost antiseptic.
Yeah,
the whole film. That's why I mentioned about the new guns, the new gun belts,
right.
The new clothing.
Shiny.
But I wonder, he must be aware of that, right? I mean, he whitewashes that whole town.
Yeah.
You almost can't see. It's so bright
yeah.
when they walk. I got the point. It's a white town.
Mm-hmm. Which is also a reference, I think, to High Plains Drifter, where Clint Eastwood paints the town red.
Oh, good one. No.
But yeah, it just felt a little too backlot.
Well, here's something I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Old Henry, we've got two Westerns that we've talked about in the last month or two. What do you think?
Well, this one had a budget. This one had Netflix behind it.
Yo, wow.
Yeah, right, you know?
I think it was like 90 million, or somewhere 60 or 90
okay,
million.
Okay, I could see that.
Can you believe it?
You could feel it, right?
I know.
It's in everything. The train. I was, that shot of the train,
yeah.
and I was like, wow. Okay, so that's not a CGI. That's a real train.
Yeah.
So yeah, Old Henry is, you know, this is one of the great things about movies, is the budget. What does the budget do, right? The budget becomes a part of the artistic expression. Old Henry is a low-budget movie. The scale is very small.
Very small.
It takes place on that guy's property.
Yes.
Right? This movie takes place all over the West. So, you know what I mean? We're in saloons. We got trains. We got big safes to break out of and break into. We got banks. So yeah, you can feel the money here.
And I think because there's such an emphasis on Tim Blake Nelson's character, Old Henry, that you're able to focus on that. And whereas this one, which is a much larger scope, has bigger backgrounds and more characters. Right. It's a different kind of movie, dependent upon the budget that you're allowed to have. Yeah. But then it creates what I think to be a little gem in Old Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And a different kind of gem in the other. I think I've had in the last couple of months been satisfied with my Westerns, which I miss very much because I grew up on them.
Yeah, for sure.
And this one, I think this one, now we're talking about The Harder They Fall, is a crowd pleaser. Old Henry is probably not.
You know, and I think that there's a calculated element to this. You know, I read an interview with James Samuel, and he was saying how, you know, or maybe it was Jonathan Majors. I can't remember which of them was talking about how they, when they're talking to other people in their peer circles about Westerns, half of them go, I love Westerns. Half of them go, I hate Westerns. You know, and he was thinking that most of those folks who say they love them don't really know about them. And the ones that say they don't like them probably haven't seen them or haven't seen themselves in them. So I feel like there's a bit of a commercial calculation in how shiny the this movie is, you know, in how kind of with the music and the cleanliness of it and the antiseptic, as you put
so
it.
Has he shot his load on this?
That's it.
And where else is he going to? Whereas with Clint Eastwood, it seemed to evolve. His association with Westerns seemed to be a lifelong thing, seemed to be organic. Whereas with James here, it looks like it might be a spectacular one-shot deal.
Yeah, I don't. I'll tell you, I want to see more.
Yeah, me too.
I want to see more of what he can do.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was a lot of times it came in little sort of clever twists in the violence or little. There were these things that he did that were very tactile, like in the fist fight between Zazie Bates and Regina King.
Yes.
During the big shootout at the end, you know, there's a big gunfight happening and it's cross-cut with the fisticuffs between these two characters. And there were like these just really sort of detailed little things that he was doing that made you feel the fight.
Yes.
You know, she hits her with an oar or something and she like lifts off the ground just a little bit.
Yes, yes.
Like you can feel those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made me really excited to see what
In
he
fact,
could do.
In fact, when somebody was shot, he was lifted up. I think he shot him several times.
About
the third shot, the guy went right off the ground.
Little twists like that.
And I think
flourishes.
You know, I'd like to just mention on that fight between the two ladies.
Yeah.
This is a fight that ordinarily would have happened between the two male heroes, you know, and any Western.
And I
love that twist, and it works because Regina King has set herself up as a badass.
Yeah.
And then you're just saying, oh, this poor girl is going to get the heck beaten out of her.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Those variations and his music, the things that he brings in to make this a new Western, also does not obliterate the charm of the old Western. He does, you know, he's able to do both. That's genius in itself. You know, for me, he doesn't have to do another thing, and I'll always remember him for this.
I would love to see him, you know, they do intimate a sequel at the end. And, you know, I don't necessarily need him to revisit this world, but I would love to see what this guy does in a less sort of operatic, gaudy vein.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to see him get a little gritty and a little more down to earth.
And also because the formula is a crutch for most directors, as it would be for anybody putting a film like that together. Well, we need to have this in order to satisfy the requirements of the genre.
Yeah.
So let's get him out of that and let's see, because he's clearly a creative guy. Yeah. Love to see him. I'm with you. Love to see him.
I love some of the compositions, you know, were really beautiful. And there's the shot of Lakeith Stanfield and then the other guy, I can't remember his name, but they were, you know, they're rivals, and there's always this debate about, and the shot of them standing facing each other and their shadows kind of elongated behind them, you know, stretching out over the dusty town road. It's beautiful stuff.
Look at the shot, the long shot of the train is straight out of Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
You know, that's his train movie in which you see him getting close to the object. It's great.
Yeah.
And you mentioned him. I love that old guy getting out of there. And then let's not forget one of the influences here.
Oh, go ahead. What?
Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All over the place.
I love the dialogue. You know, that was the other thing we should talk about real quick. I know we're going over our usual time. One of the great pleasures of a Western is in the way the characters talk. You know, much obliged man.
Yes.
I did such and such on account of this, right? Samuel brings this black vernacular to the proceedings. He doesn't change, it still feels like a Western, but the way the characters talk is really, it's like this beautiful combination of Western style dialogue with, you know, a black vernacular tinge to it. It's really great.
How about attaching in several cases to the women, y'all?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they did that 150 years ago, but it sounds so good.
The sound of the movie.
Yes.
The sound of the dialogue is really fun and Tarantino-esque, to be sure.
Yeah.
One thing we got to mention, this cast, Idris Elba, Jonathan Majors, Regina King, Zazie Bates, Lakeith Stanfield. And I think you can't talk about this movie without talking about the little ace up its sleeve, which is Delroy Lindo.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know how you could forget that, and he looms like
that guy,
Elba.
Right. He just a part of me was like, I just want to see Idris Elba and Delroy Lindo go head to head. You know, in a movie. Just give me those guys in a scene. You know, but that guy, every time he shows up, I don't care what genre he's in, what costume he's in, he just commands the screen and he feels right at home, right? He felt like, more so than anybody in this movie, he felt like a part of that landscape.
And when he, and I know others do, but when he points his guns this way in the Christ-like pose.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's beautiful. You know, where he stops everybody in the bank heist for it, and he puts it, and when they put the guns, and he does that somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just love that pose because it doesn't make sense that you can hold off a whole bunch of people by just having two guns.
Yeah, I know.
Like this.
And that's part of what we love about Westerns is the posturing.
Yes.
You know, right? It's about how someone strikes a pose and what that pose means,
yes.
the command that it's supposed to hold over people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
We've come a long way from High Noon, which
sure
is
have,
a very
yeah.
small film by comparison, but the same tension of, you know, facing off, of eventually facing off. But the difference that I like is that currently we're able to maybe overdo it, but we're able to bring in so many more characters than you had in High Noon. And
well, it's a different. The characters that we have in High Noon are indicative of the story.
Yeah.
You know, you have the central figure, the Gary Cooper figure, and you have the townspeople kind of circling around him.
Yep.
And then you very much feel their evaporation, the townsfolk evaporating as the villain approaches, because they're afraid of death, right? And that's the other thing that looms over Westerns is death.
Yep.
Whether you're going to invite it, whether it's going to you're going to flirt with it, defy it, or whether it's just going to befall you despite your best efforts, right? Whether because it's the other thing is, you know, two things that loom over Westerns: villainy, right? Somebody who's just going to take something mm-hmm. from you, mm-hmm. or the harshness of the life, right? And High Noon, that story it's a different story.
Well, and to take your verb, doesn't the Grace Kelly character evaporate, in a sense, to leave him? In this one,
but she comes back.
She does. But in that moment, she leaves him, and he is alone. Never do the women leave anybody in
you know,
the harder they fall.
Now that is a great point, because Western heroes, we traditionally don't want to see our Western heroes nailed down to a monogamous relationship, right?
Yes.
We don't want them attached. We want them to be laconic.
Yes.
And this movie ends definitely with, you know, the romantic union headed out into the landscape together.
Yes.
Right? Which is maybe one of the most dramatic sort of variations on the genre that Samuel attempts.
The harder they fall.